What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
We'll welcome you back to Meet Me at Mutual. I'd say it's the first show of the off season or whatever it may be, but you know, Alan and I just did this on Saturday night and Skype doesn't like us very much. So we're gonna try it again. I'm your host, Daniel Shropshire, C70 at C70 on Twitter, and of course, like I said, that's Alan Medlock from Red Dirt, Red Bird, and A Medlock One on Twitter. And yeah, we had a pretty good show that nobody's ever going to hear Saturday, but today's news will supersede a lot of that. The Cardinals finally had their end of the year press conference. Not press conference per se, because this time it was like still taking questions in an open setting. They had it as a closed media session, and I don't know, Alan, I don't know that means anything. I don't know if it's or if they just wanted to try. It was really weird knowing that the media was meeting with Mo and not getting these immediate tweets. It was like this radio silence for an hour, and then all of a sudden everything flooded out. And I don't know if there was a reason for that, if the Cardinals just decided they wanted to do it that way.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I thought the same thing. I was really looking forward to today whenever they kind of made the announcement that there would be they would actually be meeting with media or the presser, which I thought they would do kind of like they've done the last few years. And I thought, okay, I'll be at the house by around midday and I'll see if I can't get it to stream or whatnot. And then you didn't hear anything. And I thought, well, am I wrong on the date? Or, you know, I kind of thought about that. And then when Jeff Jones posted that, and you were right, I was glad you pointed that out to me, that it was behind closed doors and how everything was going to be. Well, I thought, well, that's just, you know, there's no telling what's going to go on there. But then, I mean, we went over an hour before we got our first bit of information. So I thought, this was weird. So, you know, I don't know what to make of those things. It sounds like they're trying to change a lot of the things that, you know, the Mark Saxon article to kind of summarize everything just that came out earlier this evening was really good. But, the tweet that came out with it, the headline had kind of said, hey, they're looking at doing different things, you know, from top to bottom. And, you know, I wonder if that's just one of them. I don't know. I mean, there's no telling.
Yeah. And I mean, it may have been that they really did want to just kind of, you know, take this away from the cameras, take this away from the public and kind of maybe focus their message a little bit more. I don't know. Probably didn't mean anything. It's just a little strange that it was a little bit more, you know, secretive. But boy, I can tell you could tell as soon as those doors open, because if you're following Gould and Reigns and Langosh and Jeff Jones, I mean, all of these tweets just come spilling out, basically all saying the same thing. I still remember it reminded me of the 2000, and I guess it was 2011 spring training when Mark McGwire showed up in spring training, and there was like seven tweets in my timeline that all said McGwire's here, you know, or something of that nature. It's like you could tell when the media gets something that you're going to get all that information. But again, big, as you said, for the fact that how they did it may not matter, but what they said did. The Cardinals shake up their coaching staff a little bit, but it sounded like it was less of a, well, it definitely wasn't like last year, or like the last couple of years. They haven't shaken it up to get new voices. They haven't shaken it up to light a fire under the manager. You know, Jose Oquendo, which is the big domino to some degree in this whole thing, Jose Oquendo decides he's ready to go back to Florida, to be back home with his family, to help the organization in Jupiter. And that kind of set the ball rolling. You know, Alan, I think you and I have talked a little bit about Oquendo in the past, and you know, they went to him before they made Schilt the permanent manager, asked him if he was interested. He didn't really say. He said basically no, that time's gone. he's talked about, you know, he really likes Shield, and that might have kept him here. But I always felt like, you know, once he knew he wasn't going to manage, he really enjoys instructing the young people, kind of molding those young players and getting them on the right path. And he can do that from basically the comfort of his own home. It's a hard thing to take him away from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I always think about this kind of situation too, where I love Oquindo and would really like to keep him around. Baseball's a hard life to live. Mm-hmm. To not only do it as a player, then all the years as a coach, and then, you know, actually go and you realize that your knees have given out on you, and you stay back in Jupiter and do the Kissel thing, and like you said, and instruct the minor leaguers to get back into it. I could understand where there would be a little bit of I think I had my time in the sun on this, and so that move didn't. You're right; it didn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, and again, like you said, tough life. It really is. And when you do have the opportunity to stay, to keep your foot in it, but still do it from home. And you're right. He is the George Kissel of our generation. I know we talk a lot about Mike Shildt and his connections to George Kissel, and that's definitely worth mentioning. But I think Oquindo is the one that's doing a lot of with it. You know, he's the organization man. He's been here for, he's really the keeper of the Cardinal way to some degree. And while Shildt is a good representative of that as well, I mean, Kendall's somewhere he's been doing it longer too. So, you know, and you don't want to think about it, but, you know, Kendall's, I didn't look it up, but he's got to be, what, early 60s now? He's had the knee replacements. You know, it's asking a lot for him to be. Mm-hmm. And they said he may spend some time in St. Louis this year, but for the most part, he's going to be in Jupiter. Now, you know, as somebody pointed out, you got to hope that with this, with Shildt here, with some of these others that are involved, you got to hope that any kind of defensive progress that they made and base running progress that they made this year, and I think there was some, it felt like they ran the bases better and played defense better. Not great, but they still did better. You got to hope that doesn't leave when he does.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I wonder if that would be a high priority upgrade. You know, I don't know how much. I think it's more personnel than it is coaching in that situation. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that whenever he was in this heyday, they didn't have the problems that they do now. So, yeah, I think where, you know, the Stubby Clap situation adds kind of a wrinkle to it. I kind of wonder what quality they're looking for that other spot, you know, on the coaching staff. And it'll be interesting to see a lot of the focus of the guys the guy that they probably bring in.
Yeah, because that's the other part of this. Okay, no leaves, which frees up third base. Pop Warner, who was bench coach, moves to third base coach, which opens up a spot at bench coach, which means that Oliver Marmol, who's been at first base, is going to move to bench coach. And then, you know, obviously there was a lot made of the hitting coaches at the managerial change. George Greer goes back to the minor leagues to work kind of like Oquindo, to work with those young guys and mold them before they get their bad habits. Mark Badeska is going to step back to assistant coach, which I thought was kind of interesting that they're going to go out and look for a hitting coach. They're looking for a hitting coach. They're looking for a first base coach. Stubby Clapp gets one of those jobs if he doesn't go to Toronto or wherever he goes. Kind of feels like the Cardinals expect him to get a job somewhere else.
That's exactly how I feel. That was like today was a charity. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of how I felt.
Yeah, I think if they didn't really give him at least the serious credence to him going somewhere else, and they may not be 100% sure he will, but they would have said Stubby Clapp is the first base coach, or you know, Stubby Clapp is the hitting coach, whatever it may be. And I think, I don't know, but anyway, what do you think about Badeska stepping back? And again, we don't know if it was his choice, if the organization's choice, or whatever. But you know, he's had the main role; he did a fine job with it. It seemed like, and it seems like you might be looking more to, you know, have somebody to come supplement that. I can't remember; maybe even Rusty
Yeah, Rusty had a good take on that.
Yeah, I guess it was though that he said they were might be looking for an analytical, statistical based hitting coach that Podesta's personal touch could supplement, which is seems reasonable enough. Something like a Mike Maddux on the hitting side. I just don't know who that is.
Yeah, I agree, and that's one of those that I could even build on that at all. I'm not sure, and that's it's one of those situations too with him. I never think of assistant hitting coach. I think a co-hitting coach, really. You know what I mean? So I don't know if titles make that big of a difference on the, in that. There's going to be two. He knows his gig. He's made it to the big leagues. You know that I think that's. I'm sure he's probably happy with that situation. The Greer situation didn't surprise me at all either. I mean, that guy's in the 70s. You know, he finally made his the debut. I mean, this is a guy that retired as a Division I coach. You know, and got pulled out to go do the Mets organization before joining the Cardinals. And I could see that. That one didn't surprise me at all. I mean, that's another one of those. That's a hard life, and I'm sure he's probably going to enjoy it. Semi-retirement coaching in the summer, you know, and the minor league guys. So, you know, the Podesta deal, I'm not real sure, but none of those moves surprised me. And I think that if probably he kept his job, I'm not so certain that the assistant coaching role really means that much.
Yeah. He may have wanted to step back. He may have, you know, you're right. He may still do a lot of the same stuff he was doing anyway. Just in a different, have a little bit less responsibility on it or something like that.
True,
I don't know.
True.
It will be interesting. I mean, the only other hitting coach that you can used to be you knew a couple of them, and I don't anymore, but you did notice that the Cubs got rid of Chili Davis. I don't know that Chili Davis is that kind of hitting coach. I don't think that's necessarily what the Cardinals were looking for. I don't know.
Yeah, no telling on that. I mean, that kind of seems like a toxic situation right now as well. I thought about that. I was like, yeah, that's kind of ugly, and then him come out to say, you know, things about the organization and about their how they run the organization and the inner workings there. I kind of thought that was a little bit strange. So I don't know. I don't know if that's a name, but I couldn't. It may very well be because I can't really think about any others other than Perry Hill, and that's about all I've got. I don't know.
And it may be. I mean, again, they know a lot more than we do, especially when it comes to these kind of things. And again, you just don't know how much a hitting coach makes a difference. I mean, they do, I think. But do they make as much of a difference as we put on them? I don't know. But it may just be on how the organization can reach these guys and give them the information that they need. So that's going to be interesting. And again, it may be that, I don't know, I don't think of Stubby Clapp as a hitting coach. I don't know why. I mean, maybe he is. I think maybe Kyle had a note but Kyle, I think, was talking about him being a pretty good third base coach, although he would be a first base coach in St. Louis. It feels like if Stubby Clapp is on the major league roster next year, it's as a first base coach to me. Do you?
Yeah, I would think so. And that which is funny because Kyle pointed this out too, and that was kind of the first thing I thought about. He coaches third every day, which I know Warner has too, but Warner hadn't been a manager in the system for several years. Mm-hmm. So I kind of thought that was this strange that they're like, well, he may be the first base coach or the hitting coach. We're gonna interview him, and he gets one of the others if he stays in the organization. And I thought I figured he'd be the natural fit to be the third base coach, but. I'm not certain. I'm not sure. Some of these inner working deals, the Cardinals can be so cryptic about it. I think they played their cards right on this one and announced what they were, I think they were pretty upfront with their announcements, but I don't know. It just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not as familiar with Stubby as Kyle or others would be, and so I can't say that he wouldn't be a hitting coach, but it feels like if you've been a manager, base coach, bench coach, that kind of stuff would seem to be more in the wheelhouse. I do think it is kind of interesting that they didn't automatically promote him to bench coach, but instead moved Oliver Marmol over there, and Marmol and Shildt have a good relationship. In fact, they said Shildt is the scout that signed Marmol as a player. And I think that it feels to me like Marmol's kind of like the guy coming out. You know, as we talk about the Cardinals having outfield depth and pitching depth, well, now it feels like they've got managerial depth because they've got Shields there, but then they've got Clapp, who's a possibility, and then they've got Marmol, who they seem to be doing a lot of the similar things that they did with Shields and giving him opportunities. And not like either one of those guys is going to have much of an opportunity anytime soon in St. Louis, you wouldn't figure. Unless here's a quicker hook than we've ever seen out of John Jose Lock and company. But it was just kind of interesting to see them, you know, kind of have that kind of young managerial talent as well, and guys that seem to be able to, you know, again, Stubby Clapp very well may be Toronto's next manager or somebody else's next manager. Marmol may be starting to get some of that kind of publicity in a year or two. It's just kind of interesting to see them develop managerial prospects as well.
Yeah, and I thought the same thing whenever he was promoted to the bench coach job. I thought the same. I was like, well, that's kind of fast track, kind of like a Shield situation. I probably should have looked this up beforehand. But outside of Maddox, which he would have been obviously a Mosley-like hire, was everybody else brought on by Mo?
What do you mean?
Within the organization.
Well, I mean, you know, Jamie Pogue is the bullpen coach, manager, catcher, a lot of different things there. He was a Matheny hire, but everybody else is within the last two or three years.
Well, I mean, like, within the organization period, because, I mean, I know he hired Shildt.
He wasn't, and Pogue wasn't in the organization then. Maddox, obviously not.
Would be the only one, which, of course, he is a hire, though.
Yeah, I guess everybody else.
Buddha, I'm not sure. That's the thing. I'm not sure. I don't know how long he'd been in the organization.
Well, but, he's been in it long enough. You know, he's been in it two years. I mean, he came up through, you know, from the minors to be on the staff, so yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, that Mo has his hand in just about everything involved right now, you know. So makes sense.
A lot of other things kind of come out of this. The biggest takeaway, and again, I think it's probably typical John Mozeliak, because it's depending on how you want to take it or how you want to read into it. But there was some discussion about big prospects and whether you need a big bat and whether you need to go out and get, without naming names, Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. And John Mozeliak says something to the effect of that they've won without a franchise player since Pujols left. They, he has to have, be smart with the finances. But on the other side, it's also, I think if you elaborate those quotes, he said, you know, it's easier to win with a franchise person. And, you know, you have to be smart with the money. Doesn't mean that that's ruling out, you know, making a good investment. So, I don't know. What did you take out of the comments, the tweets that were floating around?
Well, I thought that it didn't do it justice by not going through the whole thing. By how he finished, because the very first tweet that came out was talking about how they've won without a franchise player. You know, they've done it, but he elaborated more than what was actually posted. And it makes sense. They have. And then you look and you're like, well, you know, you're greedy and you want to win the National League every year. Well, that doesn't happen very often. Mm. You know, you kind of have to take a step back and think it through. But yeah, it makes sense. Anything that was said today, I think there was some pointed things that either were kind of cryptic, and I think that was more directed at players than it was to anything else. But other than that, I felt like there was a lot of Mo speak today.
Yeah.
And that you can't take anything for granted of what they said, because you kind of want to jump off the ledge by going, well, that means they're not going to get anybody. You are not going to go get anybody big. But you can tell as an organization that they're seriously looking for some improvement. You can read between the lines on a lot of that. So I think they're going to be involved in just about everything. But other than that, I try not to be too reactionary today. In the past, I've been pretty bad about that.
I mean, and you look at things that he does say, if you want to be optimistic, and he says, look, they need a hitter.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they need a left-handed hitter, although they have a little bit of optimism about what Dexter Fowler can bring to the table. But even if Dexter Fowler is 100% Dexter Fowler, he's not a middle-of-the-order hitter. I mean, and that's what I feel like that they're looking at.
100%. The way that I took that and the way that I think they may take that is they have a lot of hope still for the high on-base ability of Carpenter and Fowler to get on front and get in front of somebody, to get in front of another hitter. That's the way that I took that.
Yeah, I think that that's right. I think that Mo has said that before, how he continues to dream on that to some degree. I do love reading this article, reading this comment. Now, what positions are there certainties, areas that you don't feel can be improved upon? Mo, I'd say there's certainty at catcher. First base, he's on our team, but I wouldn't write in stone Matt Carpenter at first. Obviously, we're advocates for Colton Wong, but DeYoung at short is pretty certain. Ozuna is pretty certain. Bader's pretty certain. I'd like to see what Fowler does. You're looking for a hitter, but I think he listed out every single position as being fairly almost certain.
Exactly. When I read that, I kind of got a little nervous about it because the first thing that I thought was the first baseman's on our team, but I wouldn't put Carpenter down. I wonder if they're holding out hope for Martinez. That's the one thing and someone had asked that. Someone followed up and asked him about that. And he said that he certainly could have a spot on this team, but he said, is it going to feel right? You know, one of those things to where he kind of said what we were all thinking, like, hey, we all love him, but you know, there's a little bit of redundancy and he can't play first. You know, one of those. That's what concerned me about that comment. I was going, wait a second, because I don't know if Carpenter playing third every day it makes you that much better, and I thought that was part of the problem this year. Not that he played terrible at third, but they were a better team with Jericho in the lineup, and that says a lot whenever Martinez was the better hitter. You know, that so I'm like, well, that I don't know if it can go down that well.
Yeah. I mean, and again, this is one of those things that you're not going to trash a player.
No.
And if you do think you're going to trade any of them, and I'm not saying that Mo plans on trading any of those guys that he mentioned, but, you know, saying, oh, well, Harrison Bader's, he's our center fielder. You know, when somebody comes to call, you know, he said, well, he's a starting center fielder. What are you going to give for that? Instead of, yeah, we don't really know if he's going to play or not. I don't know. I obviously, and even he says, you know, if you have that certainty, where do you improve? And then he gets to use arbitrage. So he's, Mo gets to use that. he's good. You talked about it and we'll talk about it now. But that was one of the things that was mentioned. There seemed to be some, and I haven't read all of these comments, but just seeing what the tweets came through, there were players that Mo was optimistic about or encouraged by or hopeful on even, and that would mainly be Dexter Fowler, I guess. There were players that he was less than enthusiastic about, which were Brett Cecil, Luke Gregerson, and then Marcelo Zuna seemed to come in for some criticism as well. You know, they talked about Ozuna. He's going to go see,
Elatrosh.
About his shoulder. Sounds like it's just a, you know, kind of checkup. What can we do? Not necessarily we're going to cut him open type of thing, but, you know, you never know. Mm-hmm. Once you get into a doctor's office, you just never know what's going to happen, especially when they make their money cutting people open. But it sounded like there was a little bit of, tension maybe between the front office and Ozuna, or at least in their idea of what they thought they were getting out of Ozuna and what he really provided. Now, as some people pointed out on Twitter, some of that is, hey, you traded for a hurt player and you knew he was hurt, but it sounds like maybe he wasn't working hard enough to overcome that hurt like they thought he would.
I agree with that. And now that, and just like what you and I were talking, Claiborne pointed out a lot of times, and it was several times throughout the year, that the overriding opinion is that Ozuna didn't work that hard. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a friend that works in the Texas League, And at the All-Star game, that was actually pointed out, that the club was disappointed in Ozuna. Maybe in a couple of others, to be honest with you. But I think there's validation that there was a little bit of disappointment in the work ethic that was brought over with Ozuna. And I think this leads to that. Whether that's to, I thought that it was funny in the Saxon article this evening that it kind of pointed out to, hey, he can get better. He's just going to have to work to do it. And it kind of called him out a little bit. I thought that was interesting. And I'm excited to see how this actually goes in the offseason. I feel like Ozuna has a big year next year. I get nervous when you go see a specialist though. Now, I understand you and I had this conversation too that, you know, these are the guys that do go to these specialists and see these because, you know, these guys have built a name up. But when you go, it's usually not now this could be a delayed situation. But when you're going to get that shoulder checked, whether that's your labrum, whether that's your cuff, whether that's, you know, it could be several things. It's generally worse than inflammation. You know, there's usually something structurally wrong. Now, shoulders can bounce back, but it takes rest. So that could be part of the plan. I just get nervous that, you know, if things don't improve, that it wouldn't be a situation where he may be out an extended period of time. And, you know, everybody kind of jumps to the conclusion of, hey, just get it done now. Heck, you get it done now, you're still – we still probably wouldn't see you till June.
Mm.
You know, maybe July. So I think it's kind of a rush to judgment to say, hey, go get this done because, hey, shoulders are painful to recover. So the you know, this kind of went off into a little bit of a rant, but you know, maybe that's what he's avoiding, and if he is avoiding pain, then that probably speaks volumes. And you know, I don't know, there's a lot of red flags around the situation where I do think he'll have a big year next year and he's going to be a contributor. I think there's bigger problems than we know.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And again, I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine. I'd almost think that it's more painful to deal with the shoulder and the rehab and things like that than it would be, you know, having it cut open. You know, it could be, or at least longer lasting pain. He dealt with the pain all year long.
Yeah.
But like you said, I mean, they didn't do right after the season. And to the point now where, yeah, it starts pushing you into the season, at least even if you go now and they're not going until, he's not going to go to, I don't think his appointment's till the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, at that point in time, and especially with Ozuna becoming a free agent at the end of the year, I'm sure he thinks, hey, I can't afford to miss half a season, you know?
Yeah.
Even if I have a really strong second half, you know, what's that going to do for my free agency? And that's fair. I mean, I think that's fair for him to look at it that way. I don't know. I mean, but it is interesting that, and I don't know, because, I mean, there's been, I think there were some whispers maybe even when he was with the Marlins of some work ethic issues or something of that nature.
They tried to send him down.
Yeah, but some of that I think was contract stuff, you know, it's like they were looking for an excuse so that he would, you know, get an extra year of control on him too. But yeah, I think there was some of that. You're right. And so, I mean, I don't know. I mean, is this fault somewhat? I mean, there's gotta be some fault probably on the front office of maybe not doing enough work of talking to people and saying, hey, is he going to do, what's he doing with his shoulder? What kind of work is he doing? Well, you know, how easy is it for him to get there? And maybe they're just used to people, you know, showing up for appointments and doing things and working hard, and they didn't really expect that, but.
I don't, you know what? Now I may be a babe in the woods on this, but I will say, I get the feeling that the Cardinals do their background maybe overly aggressive. And you know, and they turn over quite a few stones. But that may blow up in my face because obviously some of the gambles they've taken recently haven't worked out,
sure.
You know, free agents wise. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. But I just can't, I don't know. Something to me just, it may just be the player. That's what I'm leaning towards, and I don't know if because I always heard that you know, forever you heard that he was just such a good guy, and I believe that he is, you know, but, you know, I hate to say this, the hard work this stuff doesn't surprise me. Yeah. So I don't know, you know, I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth a little bit. It's kind of it's just a terrible situation to be in. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope that it gets rectified, and I hope it was more of a getting used to new surroundings deal. But, you know, I was also pretty livid about the issue of showing up on time.
Yeah.
And that's a black mark for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was a tough one. It's hard to believe that it's been forever ago, but just a few months. But yeah, and again, we don't know. We're not at all in this situation, and it could be that, you know, I don't know. Again, it was kind of what we talked about. You and I have talked about in different contexts. There are cultural issues too. I mean, you know, the expectations for people are sometimes different, or how they express that work ethic and things of that nature could be different. I mean, I don't know. So you hate to judge too much, but again, you know, if it's a situation, as he kind of says, you know, like you said, we can show you where the water is, but we can't make you drink. Mm-hmm. You know, we will set him up with places to do that, which is to like work on his shoulder and stuff like that. Whether it's in the Dominican, Miami, Jupiter, wherever he wants to do it, but eventually he has to show up. And again, that's the thing. You know, they can give all the opportunities, but they're not going to go drive him to it. You know, I mean, he's got to put in the need and want to do that, and hopefully he will. I mean, if nothing else, again, he's got this big payday coming out that he needs to have a good 2019, and doing that work is important. Fascinating enough, they asked him if you can't sign a marquee free agent, do you worry if he ends up with a division rival? That's an interesting question to ask, because I'm sure that's the idea of Bryce Harper showing up in Chicago, yeah, or something. But you know, that's just the way it's got to be. But he does say, we're not going to sell our soul to be all in for 19 and 20 and then worry about 21 later. That's never how we've tried to operate this organization. Whether you agree with that philosophy or not, you could argue we've had sustained success over that period with very few organizations can mirror. And there is something to that. I mean, the Cardinals have never had, you know, a 60-win season, a 70-win season. They've never gotten burned so badly by contracts that they can't do anything else. I mean, they've got some bad contracts, but they still have money to spend if they want to. So there is something to that. But how do they balance that against possibly, like I say, you've got Harper and Machado this year who are really rare birds, even though there's going to be some players like Nolan Arenado coming up, Mike Trout maybe coming up in a couple of years. You may have some other opportunities, but it feels like, especially with Bryce Harper, when you're looking for a left-handed power bat, he's a left-handed power bat. You're looking for a guy that can be your core guy. He can be that core guy. He can take you from the Yadier Molina out of Wainwright to the Jack Flaherty and Nolan Gorman era, you know, whatever that may be. He's a guy that in 10 years still could be, I mean, you're only looking at 35, 36, even at the end of a 10-year contract. You know, how do they balance not tying up so many future resources against the opportunity of making an impact that could really, really revamp this team?
Yeah, I thought that was it was some interesting statements too, and really directed questions. I thought that was funny, but yeah, you're right. These are two transcendent players early in their career, you know, that can it's so tough to talk about because this is going to be ad nauseum, you know, here for the next few months until we figure something out. But yeah, this doesn't come along very often, and you're going to have to play in those waters at some point. So, I think we're going to probably hear them more connected than some do. just, you know, my opinion. I think they're gonna probably go as far as they're willing to go. But I just don't see it happening, just because I just can't see that kind of money being. I think both of those are going to be a bidding war. It's going to be interesting to see. And I thought there were some interesting Mozilla comments further along in that article, kind of along those same lines of someone asked him, is this going to be a slow market? And he said, I think next year, he goes, this is just my opinion, last year was probably going to be an outlier, and that the phone has really been ringing this year. Mm-hmm. Which tells me, I think that a lot of people are angling to not get those two. You know what I mean? They're yeah. afraid they're just not going to be able to do it. So I don't know. I think that this is going to be one of the craziest offseason in a long time, just because of the way that you put it. This doesn't happen very often for guys this young and with this kind of track record at this age. And you're right. I mean, a bad 10-year contract takes them just past their, you know, what is perceived as their prime at the 32, 33, 34 season. So this is crazy. I mean, this is LeBron James type stuff. You know what I mean? To where, you know, it seems like he's been around a long time. He's not that old, you know, and that's yeah. kind of going to kind of be the case.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at, and again, Mo here says that nothing's off the table. He says, does that mean you won't see anything dramatic between now and February? No. So, you know, have they given up on Cecil and Fowler? They also say no. Because basically they were asked, hey, you haven't necessarily done great in free agency over the last little bit. Does that make you worried about not making another costly mistake? And Mo says, no. Look, I mean, at the time, and he's right, at the time, the deals made sense. Cecil mm-hmm. was a little bit weird because he was a reliever, but it was like a 4-year deal, and it's still not, what was it, $6 million, $7 million a year maybe? I'm not sure probably it was about that much, which is a little pricey for a reliever, but it's like, hey, it's a reliever, and, you know.
And if you remember, it was early.
Yeah.
He went and was really aggressive early.
Mm-hmm. And then in Fowler, we all said, hey, he's probably not worth quite that. But he is the best center fielder on the market, and the Cardinals needed a center fielder at the time. Now, if they'd known Tommy Pham was going to, you know, blow up like he did, and Harrison Bader was going to make it as fast as he did, and things like that, then they probably don't go get Dexter Fowler. But at the time, they needed a center fielder, and Dexter Fowler was the best one out there. And hey, guess what? The Cardinals got the best free agent available, which is not something that they usually do, and then it does this. So, you know, I think it's interesting that they're not ruling it out. You know, they do say that Giancarlo Stanton's deal last year, that being able to take that, was kind of like a one-time thing. Not a one-time thing, but it was very focused on the fact of it was Stanton. It was a bit of an open auction type of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were willing to take it on for Stanton. Doesn't mean that they would necessarily take it on for anybody else. But boy, I got to think, you know, if you're willing to take it on for Stanton, how are you not willing to look at a guy like Harper or like Machado? Although Machado's comments over the last couple of days about hustle might not work so well in St. Louis.
That is my deal. I just don't think that would play well in St. Louis, and not just that situation. There are other things about Machado that I just don't think would mix well.
Yeah, I can see. I think that's very possible too. I do feel like, even though the Cardinals seem to have that, of course, you know, Machado wants to play short, and, you know, maybe you let him play short and DeJong play third, and you're doing overall it works out. But even one thing, I think Harper makes more sense.
Oh, I agree. And that's the thing, is the Machado deal, I think the him being a terrible shortstop was actually probably overblown, because he's actually been really pretty good in L.A. But the selfish stance of that's where he wants to play too is one of those that bothers me. And I don't know. I mean, I think that I've worried about that from the beginning. Yeah, I agree. I think Harper would be the bigger play. Yeah, for several reasons. All the ones that we pointed out. You know what I mean? That's, you know, that, You get that outfielder. You get that middle of the order bat. You get the personality. You get the personality that is perceived as very respectful to the game, that would appreciate something that St. Louis brings. I think all those things. It's really funny is that it's almost too perfect. And then I've got to tell myself they're probably not going to spend $300 million anyway. So yeah. I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't. It's going to be wild this offseason. You know, last year was crazy just because we felt like there was going to be some big time changes, but it could be very entertaining just to watch the bidding war on those two, regardless who wins it.
It could be. I mean, we'll see how it works out. I think it's going to be very interesting. It'll be interesting to see which way the Yankees want to go, because they don't want both of them. I mean, they probably want both of them, but I don't think they can afford to be gambling on both of them. Because, even the Yankees supposedly have sort of bottom of the resources.
Well, it's so funny now because we hear that, they don't want any part of that luxury tax and whatnot. We heard the same thing last year. They weren't even a player in Stanton until the last minute.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so I never take them out of anything.
Yeah, Stanton might have, although I still think they could be in it for Machado. I don't know if they. I know the Dodgers got to reset their luxury tax. I don't remember. I think maybe the Yankees did too. I'm not, even with Stanton's contract, because I think they might have gotten enough of it paid. I don't remember how that all worked out, but I want to say for some reason that they still slid under and don't have to pay this year.
Well, and the Dodgers have a ton of money coming off their contract, a ton of money coming off the books this year, to where they could afford a big bat, like where they can afford one or the other.
But the thing is, of course, one of those contracts coming off the books most likely is Clayton Kershaw, and if you let Clayton Kershaw walk to get Bryce Harper, I don't know how well that plays with the fan base. I mean, yeah, they'll like Bryce Harper, and I don't think, like you said, it kind of feels like the Dodgers got a chance to see Manny Machado and then aren't necessarily that excited about having that relationship continue. Maybe we're wrong. I haven't read blogs of Dodger blogs or anything like that to tell. But
well, it was funny. One of the beat guys was on with the 101 crew, and he said the same thing. He said he goes, I see it more likely that he re-signs than before. I thought it was probably in here, but now that he's here, I think that this would probably be it. They've got Seager.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're not in a bad spot.
Right.
So that's one of those. If they sign Machado, I would be all over a Corey Seager.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's most likely. Like I said, they may spend their money on Kershaw, you know. Does that mean they are not in on Harper? I don't know. I don't know their finances. But if they aren't in it,
I think they have money even with a Kershaw coming back.
Yeah, and they may.
Because I think, I don't know if you could necessarily, which you would know better than I would, but I think you've got to figure what you're going to spend on Kershaw. It's either an opt out or a not. You know, are you going to, is that the bidding war you get into? Or I think he only opts out to maybe go to Texas. So, you know, we're going off, you know, a little too far.
You never know, for sure. But I think it's relevant because, I mean, it's, if the Dodgers don't get in on Harper, you look at the Cubs who are already tied up with player. I mean, Jason Hayward's not opting out, I don't think. And others, I mean, they're kind of tied up. I know that there's a lot of talk about it, and I'm sure they'll be in the mix, but, you know, can they go really big on him? Especially when Chris Bryant turns down a $200 million extension because, you know, so it means here in a couple, you're going to have to pay him one in arbitration and then two in a couple of years. He's a free agent. You know, are you going to push for that window? Or are you going to, you know, try to develop? I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm wondering if the market for Harper isn't going to go as high as we think it will, or Machado even, that some of these guys are going to, you know, hit some limits. And no, I think it probably still, I mean, obviously he's still going to get a lot of money. Well, both of them are. And some of these guys are going to look and say, they're going to bite the bullet and say, we'll take on the tax. We'll take on, you know, this for this player. But, you know, if it doesn't get crazy, you know, I think St. Louis would be crazy not to be in it. I mean, they should be in it anyway. But if it starts getting slow where it's $28 million a year instead of 40 or whatever, they got to be in on that.
Yeah, and you know what? And I do believe that they will be. I mean, I do. Just me personally, I feel like some of the teams that we think, and there'll be somebody that comes out of the woodwork on this, but the teams that are involved now have been known to bid stupid money. And one being Washington. You know, that's the thing. And that's one of those to where Boris is basically their general manager. So you never know when it comes to cutting time whether they don't come out and do something really, really, really stupid. I'm also not completely taking the Cubs out of that equation. And it just like you and I had talked about that no one will ever hear, it's going to sting if Harper goes to Chicago. But I'm going to tell you, they better hope they win in the first 3 or 4 years, because if they don't, they're in trouble.
Yeah.
Those contracts that they have looming are really bad.
They've got ugly money even, even next year, it feels like. I agree. You're right. I think it's kind of one of those reasons why I think unless they can make some sort of – and again, I don't rule it out that – Epstein couldn't make some sort of move to get to free up some roster, free up some financial resources, or they just don't worry about it. And because they're talking about, I think, their own TV channel at some point in time too, and you know, whatever money that comes out. But
yeah,
you know, if I just kind of wonder if the Cubs just aren't going to be that kind of player in this thing. Pull up their team payroll here. You know, right now, I think we looked at this before, they're at $185 million. And that's not, I mean, that's for next year. That's assuming, I mean, that's counting all the arbitration. They've got 8 or 9 guys in arbitration. They don't have very many that are not ready for arbitration yet. But, I mean, you know, Chris Bryant may get $13-14 million in arbitration. You know, Javier Baez might get, you know, they've got him estimated at $7 million in arbitration. I mean, a lot of money being tied up there. And then you've got, you know, John Lester at $27.5 million. He's at 30 the year after that. Oh, no, 20 the year after that. I'm sorry, I read that off. But, you know, Hayward's at 22.5, and he could be there for quite a while. You know, Darvish is at 20. Cole Hamels, either you pick up his option for 20 or he walks and you have to replace him. Zobrist to 12.5. Chatwood's at 12.5. You know, Rizzo's a bargain at 11.2. They do have options on, it'd be interesting because they have two option years on Jose Quintana. It's for 10.5. You figure they pick that up.
Yeah, that would seem like a bargain, you know, but yeah, you may.
You know, yeah. You know, there's a lot of money tied up in them already. I mean, they've got $90 million already for 2020. And if you're wondering, let me see if I can pull up what the Cardinals have, you know, on the same site, stuff like that. You know, the Cardinals have 148.5 according to this site for next year and 76 the year after that. So, you know, that's $40 million less, you know, when you look at it. And I'm not sure, I'm not doing the numbers. It looks to me like the Cubs have less players under contract than the Cardinals do, and they're $40 million more. So, I mean, they're going to have some holes to fill, some places to fill. And, you know, again, Chicago's a big market. I'm not saying that they're not going to be in on one of these guys, but yeah, you're right. If they don't win, you know, because that, from what I gather, and again, I'm no expert, but the farm system's not really there, and they're definitely not going to be able to draft first anytime soon, you wouldn't think. So you're not going to be able to get a Bryant and a Schwarber and all those kind of players. It may be the window's still open, but it may not be that large. But then, you know, maybe on the opposite of that, you say, a guy like Bryce Harper helps you absorb that, helps you, gives you that superstar while you're developing. I don't know, but could be interesting. Could be interesting to see how that all pans out.
Yeah, that this offseason will be crazy money thrown around.
Yeah, and you're right. It very well may be early, if only because I got to figure the owners don't want to run into that collusion talk again. Because if
that's a good point.
I get that you want to wait on. There's still going to be some waiting on Harper and Machado. Although some of those clubs, like you said, that know they're not going to be in it, may just go ahead and try to, you know, get a jump on that too. But, you know, if everything's slow again, that just gives the players situation, you know, players organization, association, more ammunition for those kind of things. Even if it is smart. And again, I don't think there was collusion last offseason, but it was just made a lot of, there was just some smart ball playing right there, you know, to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they do that again this time, you know, that's going to be a problem. So I expect that there'll be something, even if it's just trade. Maybe in the free agent signings, maybe a little bit slower, but I think you're right. I think those teams that say, we're not in on Bryce Harper, we're not in on Manny Machado, we're going to go out and get Donaldson early on, or we're going to go make a trade for somebody, and bring them in, or, and stay out of this mix. That's going to be something. I don't know. You know, the winter meetings are there that first week of December. I kind of think one of those big guys will sign by then.
Now that would be crazy. I mean, that would be interesting. Yeah, I don't know. It makes me want to. Do you have the dates in front of you when the winter meetings actually are?
I believe it's the 9th through the 13th. I think I looked too long ago.
Okay, that's one of those to where the. It seems it's almost like a week later than it used to be.
It may just depend on how the calendar falls. And
yeah, I think it is. That'd be super interesting because I mean that would give you about a little over a month. You know, if the World Series were to go 7 games,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's the 31st,
right?
That'd be interesting. That would be incredibly. Yeah, and then I think that movement will be fairly quickly. You know, when those shoes drop, because you're gonna have to, you know, you go to that second tier Donaldson, you go, and this is without, I'm not even counting the opt out guys at this point. I'm just counting Harper, Machado's, and then you go, you know, Donaldson, Moustakas, it's gonna be some fun, you know, to see what, whoever makes the plays on these guys. I think a lot of people are starting to think that Milwaukee may just pick up that option, you know, because Moustakas is up for $15 million mm-hmm. next year. So it seems a little high, but even with their kind of redundant roster, it kind of makes sense because they've got controllable Shaw and controllable Scope now. And then Arcia may be the one that I've always liked him as a player, by the way. Guys obviously hit in the playoffs and it never hit again, so you never know where that's going. But, you know, some of these things, I mean, there may not be as big a names out there as we think, and if you're right and one of those get scooped up quickly, I think it'll be a pretty quick off season because, you know, the bullpen's always the ones that get taken care of first. So that could be exciting if that happens. I mean, this is going to be one of those to where off season was, the last off season was so boring because the guy signed so late. This one could be active because you can be weekly that we get a big name.
You know, I gotta really think that any team is going to want to get one of those guys by the winter meetings so they can start making that money back, you know, because that's going to be the biggest, that's going to be the Christmas present for what that fan base is, the jerseys of Harper or Machado in those colors. And unless it's Washington, of course, I guess, for Harper, because everybody's already got their Harper jersey. But,
yeah.
You know, if he goes somewhere else, I think that I've always thought this, and it doesn't always work out, but I always feel like that's got to have some push there because you can make some of that money back in that excitement, in that thing. I mean, Christmas coming up, and people are buying presents, and, you know, you get those jerseys and shirts out in the stores as soon as possible, and you know, again, it's a drop in the bucket compared to the $300 million that you're paying him or whatever, but it's something, you know, and you can start seeing some tangible return already. So we'll see how that works out. We've got about an hour. We still have a couple more topics to go to. So is there anything else? I know Mo talked about Adam Wainwright, and that's the next thing I want to talk about, but is there anything else out of this conversation today that you thought was interesting?
No, I think we've covered most of what I thought may have been earth shattering. Other than that, I kind of feel like it was redundant. Kind of what we thought where we thought they would probably be going, and you know, yeah, I'm glad they finally had this, you know, and then it gave us some information. It's good to be talking Cardinals again, and kind of gives you kind of a blueprint about where they think it may go, and it's not much different than, you know, where they've actually been.
I will say the one other thing that really kind of came out of this, and I think that's a legitimate, interesting thing to say, is, you know, Mo came and said, you know, basically, and we kind of touched on it a little bit, but the Cardinals have won since Albert. They have won without a franchise player, which, as somebody pointed out, might not be the best thing to tell Yadi or Molina, but Yadi's a different case. So Yadi's not that offensive bat. He's overall, you know, heart and soul of the team. But but it's also interesting to say that, hey, we've won since Albert, which is true. But obviously, they haven't won. They haven't won the World Series, and they haven't been in the playoffs in 3 years. And you've got to start wondering. I mean, Mo pointed out, Bill DeWitt is not happy where the club is at. But I mean, is there some point in time I feel like the front office, and maybe they are, and maybe it's just kind of a little bit of spin for public perception, but, you know, winning seasons just aren't really counting as cutting it. I mean, you know, you need, you know, if you're looking at 90 win seasons, that's one thing. And I know some people will point out that that's not enough to, okay, fine, understandable, but if you're looking at, I'd rather aim for 90 win season than winning season, because this, I think, I forgot who it is on Twitter, keeps pointing out, 82 and 80 is a winning season, and that's not exactly what you want to aim for when you're looking for the playoffs. Is there that urgency? I mean, do you think the Cardinals are really pushing internally, at least, to get to 90, 92 wins, really trying to win the division, or are they just kind of content to, you know, give it a, you know, tinker around, get in there and try to get hot?
I do think they're working hard to improve, and I do think they're working hard to get to that 90 to 95 win type club. And I think that I do think that's the goal. I think that that's you win in the division. I think that's the ultimate goal, and I think they play it cool when they say that's not. I do think that some of the gambles haven't paid off, and I think that they've kept that game plan a little further than we've wanted to, but that kind of goes back to the conversation you and I have had for over 2 years now. Is this the closest we're going to see to a Cardinals rebuild? You know, not to blow it up, not go for the top 10 picks, but to see what you've got and kind of transition to, you know, make some slight transitions and try to improve in spots and go that route. I don't know, because the one thing to me that's hard to justify at this point is that there was places to improve at both deadlines and they didn't do it. I almost give them a pass at the non-waiver deadline because, one, you didn't know what you had at that point. Now, at the waiver deadline, there were places to improve where you needed reinforcement for bodies that were failing you. That's the one thing that bothers me, which that's what kind of points me into the direction of, I wonder if this wasn't a long-term tryout for some of these guys, you know, and now they may have figured out what they've got. Today's media briefing didn't really change my opinion on that, and I'm hoping that it's just more of the coach speak. This is the things that you have to say. But I do think they're aiming for that. I don't think that I think there's more going on than we don't that we don't see. And I think that there's things that will probably never really come out about how they are kind of slow playing these guys and how some of the reasons they decided not to pick up contract A or contract B or whatnot, or why they didn't, they felt like they would have blocked someone by picking up someone at the deadline. I'm sure those things will be brought out, and I'm actually kind of excited for next summer to actually get to ask those kind of questions. But you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head of the goodwill is dwindling quickly. Mm-hmm. And last year they picked up Ozuna, which kind of bought him some, but it didn't work out. And so, as of right now, some of the free agents just aren't working out, and the track record is good overall, but lately has taken a black eye. I think they're going to improve. I truly do. I think they're going to go get a bat. I don't think you can get out of this offseason without getting a bat and without getting certain bullpen reinforcements. And I think there's going to be some certainty that they get in the lineup. But there is, you don't feel that overwhelming sense of this is the year they're going to make that big splash. I just don't feel that way. But to answer your question, I do think they're trying to improve. I think there's more to this improvement than we're ever going to know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
or lack of improvement. You know, I think there's a reason they played the way that they played their cards this way for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, but I don't know if we'll ever know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know either, but you're right. I think it's going to be kind of interesting to see how things work out. And hopefully they work out as well as we'd like them to. The Cardinals do have, though, made one move so far, and that was signing Adam Wainwright, which by now is old news. You know, it's kind of old when Al and I tried to do this Saturday, and now it's really old. But in some of what came out in most press conference today was, I think, more about how Adam Wainwright was betting on himself. And it was interesting. The Cardinals haven't finalized the deal. It's not been signed. Or not, you know, filed at least, because it was interesting. A player cannot take more than a 20% cut in salary with the same team, you know, as an extension or whatever. So Adam Wainwright has to become a free agent before he can sign this thing, which means, and I think that's what we all wanted to see, right? I mean, besides the fact we wanted to see Adam Wainwright come back, this contract had to be very, very low, because you don't know what you're going to get with Adam Wainwright, and it's very incentive laden, apparently, both as starters and relievers, which is, I think, it's a pretty good thing. It leaves them open to using him however he needs to be used, not how the contract says he needs to be used, and I think that opens up a lot of possibilities for Wainwright going forward.
Yeah, I thought that today was pretty telling as far as that went. I think we all pretty much understood that, hey, there may be a $5 to $8 million goodwill contract that was probably agreed upon with incentives, and that there was some flexibility on how he was going to be used. I still think that even after the statements today that he's going to go in as a starter, and I think he'll be in the rotation to open the season next year. But today was kind of funny, because the comment that stuck out in my mind was, he bet on himself, and if he does, if he works, if not, we'll shake hands. You know, how he said that, I was like, well, that's probably pretty telling. So there's definitely motivation there.
Yeah, and I think we hear that, right? We heard it last year. Or, you know, beginning of this year, where Tommy Pham was betting on himself. And he was, you know, not going to sign that contract. And it's debatable whether it worked out for Tommy Pham. But, you know, Adam Wainwright's doing the same thing here, and he's putting his money where his mouth is. And it's great. And I thought it was great to read what Adam Wainwright said, was, look, I've made a lot of money. And of course, Adam Wainwright likes to give away a lot of his money, too. And he said, you know, the better I play, the more I make, the more I make, the more I give. So he's even, you know, motivated not only for trying to get the Cardinals back to the World Series, but to be able to increase his charitable work by, you know, pitching well. It's kind of a win-win type of thing. And I think that's great because, I mean, you know, the Cardinals gave $20 million to Yadier Molina per year for 3 years as a, in theory, a good will contract to some degree. You know, obviously Molina was in better shape than Wainwright was when that contract came up, but it was that idea that they were going to transition him out and he was going to, you know, he's getting paid somewhat for the goodwill. And that's what Wainwright's going to get here. I mean, he's getting a goodwill contract, and if it turns into something else, great. And Wainwright's even said, hey, I hope we're having this conversation again next year. I'm hoping I'm pitched well enough that we can talk about maybe doing this again. But if not, then he goes home and he starts, you know, his charitable stuff full time. It's really low risk. I mean, the only downside is the 40-man roster spot that it takes, and there's going to have to be some work done on the 40-man. That's going to be, like you said, it's going to have to come early. I think we looked it up, what, that 40-man, that non-tender thing is, it's right around the end of November, I think. So, you know, they've got a month to try to get the roster set for the Rule 5, and they've got a lot of guys to put on there. So there's going to be some guys either cut or traded here in the next month that are going to free up some spots. So that is a downside. I mean, that does take up one more spot there, but, you know, that's it. I mean, you're getting Adam Wainwright, who, yes, has struggled over the last couple of years, but looked really well at the end of last year. He looks healthier than he's been and had better velocity, had better results, had better, you know, break to the curveball, all that kind of stuff than he probably had in 2 years. You know, whether he can sustain that over a whole another year or not, I don't know, but it's definitely worth finding out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's gonna be good. It's gonna be exciting. We got a lot of irons in the fire right now. I think that it kind of took everybody by storm how well he did bounce back. You know, I don't think anybody was ready to see that, I don't think anybody was prepared that it was gonna be go that well. So I think that you know, it's gonna be exciting, and it's gonna be exciting here quick.
Yeah, should be. All right. Well, we've got one question. We had a Twitter question from our good friend Uncle Frank F.R. Robinson 1957 on Twitter, who's one of our regular listeners, one of our regular people that will give us a question when we ask for it, and there's not that many. So always you can hit up Alan or I on for questions, and especially if we're not doing a show, we'll just answer them on there. But you know, if we are doing a show, we'll save them and we'll do them on here. And Frank asked, name a prospect who did not make an appearance this year with Major League Club, but you think will make the team coming out of spring training. And since Alan and I, we did this question last time on the show that will never be seen, so I have ideas about the answers here, but I'm going to let Alan go ahead and do that first and come up with these guys that might make the team this year.
Yeah, I was glad to get this question. It's a great question, and it made me think. This is kind of a two-parter for me, and I wanted to say, I'll throw out first that I think Helsley will probably have a really good chance of making the ball club out of spring training. Now, the injury last year set him back. I thought that he probably would have made the team at some point last year when healthy, just because I think they see him profiling as a big-time bullpen addition. That was one I kind of had to think through a little bit, just because he was kind of a forgotten guy for missing so much of the middle of the season. I thought Genesis Cabrera was the one that stuck out to me right away, but I felt like that may be low-hanging fruit. I honestly thought he would have made the big league club this year as well as he pitched. But a lefty that throws high 90s is one of those guys that you just don't see that very often, especially for a team that's struggling to get left-handers out, and that they have bullpen issues from the left side. So those two are the ones that I think you're probably going to see have the best chance of making the big league team this year. And I mean, I could, one or the other, I think is almost a definite to do so if they don't bring in several arms.
Yeah, Cabrera would make interest. I mean, again, we're talking about the need the left-handed, you know, their Cecil's not going to do it. It feels like, you know, Shreve, you know, whether he's here or not, you know, he's probably not the main lefty. Tyler Webb, again, not another guy that seems to be available. So, you know, Cabrera could be, depending on what they do in the offseason, Cabrera could be a guy. And as for Helsley, I mean, again, the guy was, you know, this time last year, or at least around winter warm-up, so back in January, you know, Mo says, hey, Hudson, Helsley, Hicks, those guys can make an impact this year. Well, you know, Hicks made one immediately, and then Hudson made one later in the season. There's no, I think you're very right on Alan Helsley, assuming health, and that may be the only thing that keeps him from making it opening day, but, yeah, both those guys are very interesting. And I think the other guy that might be, get a shot is, Max Drock, who, could take that Greg Garcia role. And I mean, Yadier Munoz. I don't know why I can't say that. I just can't. I mean, it's like a mental block. I keep trying to say Yadier or something, and Yadier Munoz. Munoz guy. Yeah, that guy. You know, he's going to get a lot of that too, but, you know, obviously there's room for both those guys. I mean, they both played Garcia and Munoz played this year, so there's no reason why Munoz and Schrock couldn't play next year. He's a guy that can play middle infield at least second base. I don't know. Second and third, I assume, and I don't know if he can play short or not, but, and a guy that, you know, depending on, I mean, he may start out in Memphis, but it feels like a guy that could be a 25 man. I don't think he would make the impact that maybe Cabrera would, or maybe Helsley would, out of a bullpen, but, still might make the team. I think that's about it. I mean, we saw so many this year. You know, you hate to think that there's a whole lot more that could be coming, or that close, but there might be. I mean, heck, Randy Arozarena is a guy that could be probably not going to make the team just because there are so many outfielders, so many in front of him, but a guy that's going to be knocking on the door, and we might see sometime during the season next year, which I know will make Kyle Reese very happy. There's still some talent down there. There's no, could be wrong, even though we saw a lot of it. We'll just have to see how much of it can make it, for opening day. So, Alan, anything else we want to touch on?
Well, I think we touched on everything for a short week and to cover up from our last show this weekend. But yeah, I mean, we're going to have a lot to talk about throughout the off season, and we made up a lot of ground this week, and just from the press briefing today, and it's going to be an interesting off season. I'm actually looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be interesting. So, Alan and I will be around. We don't know when. It'll just kind of, like I said, especially for the rest of this month, probably. We may wait till November to do the next show, just because there's probably not going to be a lot more activity as the playoffs keep going. Cardinals aren't likely to do much between now and the end of the World Series. But soon after that, we'll probably have some more things to talk about, more activity to discuss. So until the next time, and like I say, subscribe to us, rate and review us while you're at it, and then follow us on Twitter, and you'll find out when the next show comes down. But until then, that's Alan, and I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!